Good afternoon. It is 4:52, Wednesday, October 23rd. This is the TDN Writers Room podcast. I'm Joe Bianca, associate editor at the Thoroughbred Daily News.
I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Daily News, and still on cloud nine after the Yankees lost to the Astros.
This guy's Red Sox shirt on and everything.
Jonathan Green from DJ Stable, general manager, and I'm on cloud 10, as it were, because we're going to have a horse running in one of the Breeders' Cup races.
Yeah.
Good stuff. This is Alan Carrasso, managing editor of the TDN.
So I guess we'll start with that. We're gonna go through the Breeders' Cup pre-entries here. They just came out about an hour or so ago, or a couple hours ago. So it's gonna be a little sloppy here as we're still kind of formulating opinions. But we'll start with Friday's races. Future Stars Friday, or am I making that up?
Is that something else?
Future Stars. Okay. So we're doing Future Stars Friday. We're gonna start with the Juvenile Turf Sprint and kicks off the festivities, and we have an interested party here. John Green and his father Len have another miracle, American Farrell Colt, coming off a fifth place run in the Futurity. Before that, won the Skidmore Stake, drew into the main body of the field. So congratulations on that. How are you feeling about it?
Thank you. No, it's quite an honor. Anytime you can have a horse go from being one of 20,000 foals born a year to, you know, 14,000, I think the number is, of horses that actually race, to 7,000 winners, all the way down to a field of 12, and having a chance to get the brass ring in one of 12, that's pretty heady stuff. So we're excited. You know, I don't sound cliche, but we're excited just to be there. But we certainly look like, based on the numbers, that we have a puncher's chance in the race.
What did you think about his run in the Futurity?
You know, basically, you can draw a line through that race for two reasons. One is it was a really, you know, kind of yielding course, which he is not a fan of, so much so that he actually ripped off his front shoe in the middle of the race and still kind of staggered home and only lost by a couple of lengths. The fact that it's going to be a firmer turf, the fact that it's going to be a 5 furlongs race versus a 6 furlong race, I think just plays right to his strengths.
Okay. I think one of the stories of this race really is Wesley Ward. He's got a couple entered. He's got undefeated Cambria, Stone Street Philly, who's 3-for-3, won the Kentucky Downs Juvenile Turf Sprint against boys. He's got the horse, I think, is one of the more interesting horses to run on Friday, is Kamari. Tenbrook Farm really put it together, I thought, an unbelievable run to win the Indian Summer last out, also against the boys. Before that, won the Bolton Landing by 4 lengths and was second of 25 horses in the Queen Mary in June 19th at Ascot. And seems to have been working well recently. I think he's got a good shot. I think she's got a good shot for Wesley Ward. You also got a couple of Aiden O'Brien Euros in there. I think the Juvenile Turf Sprint has been useful in that regard to add a little more Euro flavor. I think even more so than the other Juvenile Turf races. Any early impressions about these races?
26 entered.
You got one more than the Queen Mary.
Room for 12. Yeah, maybe they'll stage this at Ascot or something. But hey, John, I wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
Like 5/8 on that turf course in a field of 12, that's got to give you some cause to pause.
Well, I think what it really comes down to is, you know, in a race like that, any 5/8 race, I'm not saying anything that nobody knows about, but you have to be able to break and you have to show at least early speed, just if for no other reason, just to keep your position. You know, I would be worried if we're going to be 10, 11, 12 post in that race. I think anything else other than that, and you have a pretty good shot. You know, surprisingly, there are so many horses nominated for this race and pre-entered into this race. And, you know, you can make a case for a lot of them. I know, again, we're just getting the information as it's coming out. But so many of the European horses in the past have come over and you would think, okay, they're running against so many other horses and therefore they're seasoned. But the graded races there are not really graded stake races in comparison to what we run here. So, you know, you don't want to be seduced into thinking, oh my God, this horse is a grade one winner or a grade two winner already, and it's going to come and blow your doors off. Not necessarily. However, you know, to your point, they're running against, you know, 24 horses. Thankfully, it's not a relay race. You know, they all have to run straight and then make a turn. But I think we have a pretty good shot at it. And, you know, Manny Franco's actually coming out to California to ride him, which gives us a little more confidence as well.
Yeah, and I think in the 5 furlong race, I think it's really kind of high variance. It's all about trip, and it's just it's a hard race to handicap every year for sure.
And remember, and this is going to be a topic throughout many of these races, this would have been 6.5 furlongs down the hill, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is such a different race. Both this and the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint are such different races at 5 furlongs than 6.5. I mean, they're totally different animals. So, you know, that's we're going to get the first glimpse of a distance that really didn't exist at Santa Anita until, you know, this year, every turf sprint. I don't believe they ever ran these 5 furlong sprints on the turf, and they also now have 5.5 furlongs. But before that, so, you know, goodbye to the 6.5 furlongs down the hill, which, by the way, I don't want to get off topic too much. I hope they bring that back. I mean, I don't see any reason why that would be any more dangerous than anything else. And, you know, maybe they're just trying to appease some people. But I hope that, you know, we see the down the hill races back someday.
Yep. Yeah, it was definitely a unique experience to Santa Anita. Ben Massam, when he was at the Breeders' Cup, our coworker, the TDN, did a good story about with like local California trainers about what it took to win down the hill. And I think it was definitely an interesting wrinkle to throw into the championships. I'm going to move on just to the juvenile turf real quick. I don't know if there's a ton to say there. Arizona, I feel like, seems like the horse to beat for Coolmar. Was second in the Dewhurst Stakes at Newmarket last time out. Nobody in the American contingent really jumps off the page to me. I thought Decorated Invader ran pretty well to win this summer. That was a pretty slow pace. So I think he's got a reasonable chance. So, yeah, not much to say about the juvenile turf. I would say we can move on to the juvenile fillies, where unlike the juvenile, where I think there are some clear standouts. I mean, obviously you have Bast, who's a 2-time grade one winner. But I think there's a distinct possibility that a maiden winner, last out, first out maiden winner, could be the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. I'm talking about Kalim Shah's Donna Veloce, who has the highest buyer in the field, won by 9.25 lengths first time out September 28th at Santa Anita, come back and breezed a best of 44, 5 furlongs in Arcadia. So I think there's a decent chance that she'll be favored. Maybe not. Maybe the steam of the Bob Baffert Bast is too much, but I think this race is distinctly more wide open feeling than the juvenile.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And Donna Veloce is certainly very interesting. And but, you know, let's not forget, you know, you got to be a very special horse to go from a 6-furlong maiden win to win the Breeders' Cup race, the juvenile fillies. So, I mean, she's going to have to be really exceptional. And it's a classic handicapping conundrum that, you know, do you go for the fastest horse, which is her, or do you go for the proven horse, which is Bast, who's a 2-time grade one winner, has already won around 2 turns. And, you know, talk about the odds, she'll obviously be a lot higher than this, but she was 1-5 last time out when winning the Chandelier. I think when it's all said and done, that, you know, the Baffert Mojo will make Bast the favorite. But I do agree with you that Donna Veloce is going to take a lot of money, but she's not going to be somebody that when I sit down and make my picks, I just think that's too tall an order for any horse to go, you know, throw him into the deep end like this. And if she wins, you know, I'll congratulate him and say, my goodness, what a talented filly. But, you know, certainly she would even win the championship, I would imagine, if she were to win this. Right now, Bast is the leader. But Donna Veloce is interesting, but not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, stretching out from 6.5 furlongs, that's definitely a pretty significant stretch out. This is one of those races that didn't draw a full field. There's 11 pre-entered, and Etoile preferences the juvenile fillies turf, so good chance we'll get a field of 10 in there. And John, you were talking about that before we went on air about how usually it's completely full fields in the Breeders' Cup. Last year you were in the only one that wasn't in the juvenile fillies. We got a couple more this year.
Yeah, you certainly have a couple more, and maybe it's my recollection of having a horse in the race that is clouding my memory, but I seem to remember last year, even though it wasn't a full field, there were some really stout horses in there. Bellafina was in there, Kafefi was in there, Serengeti Empress, we were in there. I mean, that was a really a stout group, even though it wasn't a full field. Mm-hmm. And not to take anything away from the fillies in this race, but it doesn't seem like it has that depth of field like it did last year. You know, maybe other than the ones you guys talked about, maybe you can make a case for Wicked Whisper because she's coming in off of 2 impressive races and really didn't have to put a lot of energy into winning the Frisette. But it's a big difference, again, just from experience, knowing it's a big difference going from a 1-turn mile at Belmont to having to ship across country.
Right.
And go to Santa Anita. So, you know, she's going to have her running shoes on in that race. But needless to say, not to take anything away from this group, because, you know, usually for juvenile races, it's not a full developed group. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think this is as tough of a group as last year.
I think that's an interesting point I think that's part of the reason that I got Jaywalk at 5-1 last year.
No question.
Because of that Frisette to, I mean, it's not cross country, but still stretching out 2 turns and shipping. Yeah, just going for a real macro thing real quick is that last year we had 221 pre-entries in the Breeders' Cup. That was a record. And this year there's 188. So that's a pretty significant drop off. Last year there were 51 foreign raiders. This year there's only 47. But obviously as a percentage of the total pre-entries, that's a pretty significant bump.
Right. And just to jump in for the statistics, you know, you're looking at 2019 this year, 188 pre-entries. Last year, 221. So a 16% drop off. The year before that, when it was in Delamore in 2017, there was 187. So you'd say, okay, well, it's pretty comparable to this year. One less race that year. There were only 13 Breeders' Cup. There's 14 this year. So you're missing an entire field on top of that. So, you know, you wonder, was it an anomaly last year because it was over 220 horses pre-entered because it was in Kentucky and it was kind of centralized? Or is it, you know, people are concerned about the specter of the racetrack and the safety of it? And if you have a horse at this level, are you worried about its, you know, it being able to finish the race? Mm-hmm.
But John, you know, to play off that, because it's a very interesting take on there, and you wondered if this was going to be a factor. But can you name one good horse that's not running in the Breeders' Cup? I mean, you know, that's the thing. It's not like we're sitting here saying, oh, my goodness, Code of Honor's not going. He was on the fence for a little bit. Or, you know, I mean, whomever. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't have the answer why the entries are down, but I can't think of one horse that is, I mean, Maximum Security, perhaps, is going to run the same day, oddly. No, I'm sorry, he's running this weekend in New York. But, you know, you could see the reason he's not there is because, you know, he wasn't ready for it with all the stops and starts to his year. So, you know, the Breeders' Cup, I think, has accomplished what it sets out to do every year, is to bring together, you know, all the good, healthy horses, sprinkle in some Europeans, and, you know, let them settle it out on the racetrack.
Right. No question about it. And you're right. You're not missing any headliners. Maybe it's people who have younger horses that aren't willing to make that cross-country track, and also, you know, if they are a little bit concerned about their safety, because now for three-year-olds there are so many phenomenal races, so many great at stake races, so much money to be made, that maybe they're saying, you know what, I'm gonna skip this one and keep my horse in Florida or New York, and then run in a couple of the graded stake races, because I know Churchill Downs has two grade twos for babies, you know, for babies, like Thanksgiving to the end of the year. Florida has, and so does New York.
I can't think of one horse, though, that I take that back. 'Tis a Law.
I was going to say, weren't you ripping Barkley Tag last week?
Yeah. How soon we forget. You know, out of sight, out of mind. But there is at least one horse. Now, I think if the Breeders' Cup were in New York or the East Coast, they probably would be running. I don't want to keep going back to the same topic, but I still don't get it. You know, if you have the best horse in the country, which he well may be, he should be in the Breeders' Cup. And I just don't understand the decision.
And there's the Florida-based horse, Safi Joseph's, called Chance It, who swept the Florida Stallion, or didn't sweep, but certainly ran well in all three legs, and, you know, could have made the trip. He's going to the Kentucky Jockey Club. It's a late November race at Churchill.
One other name that isn't there is Enable, but I don't think that's because of the track. I think that was predetermined after she lost the Arc. Juvenile Phillies turf, I don't think is really worth discussing at length. The only thing I noticed is there's heavy Euro participation in there. There's 9 European horses pre-entered, and then a couple others who have previously shipped to the America for a start or two. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But to me, the marquee race of the day on Friday is the Juvenile. And that's just, I think it's a little bit top heavy, but I think you have 3 really exciting prospects going forward. Third one is Maxfield. I'm a little partial to, but I think he's exciting. But I would say the big two that everyone's looking at are Dennis's Moment and 8 Rings. I mean, they just have been peerless so far. I know 8 Rings dumped the jockey and he technically lost that race, but I think he was 1-5 in there. He probably was going to beat Nucky, I would say, if he had kept the jockey on. So I think that's the really exciting thing to watch. Is it's an early, I'm not going to say Derby preview, because there's a million steps in between the Juvenile and the Derby, but would you be shocked if 8 Rings and Dennis's Moment, if they make it in the starting gate at Churchill, are the top 2 favorites there too? I mean, I wouldn't.
No, not at all. And, you know, a lot of times, I mean, obviously the Juvenile doesn't have a great record of producing Kentucky Derby winners, but a lot of times, you know, after the race is over, you know, I mean, this horse is not going to be a contender or a factor in the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, as long as one of the, I think you're right, the big three, I'm not as high on Maxfield as you are. I just think the Breeders' Futurity of Keeneland is a road to nowhere. Horses coming out of that never seemed to run well in the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, I got to respect the horse with his form and ability as well. But, yeah, I mean, I think if, especially if somebody draws Kozlov to win this decisively. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be, you're going to look at it as a very exciting horse for, if it's one of the three, Dennis's Moment, Eight Rings, or Maxfield, very exciting horse, and really think that this is without a doubt the horse to beat in the Kentucky Derby. As you said, a million things can go wrong. We don't even know if these guys will make it to the Kentucky Derby, but yeah, and I also agree this is far and away the most exciting race of the day. You know, the all those turf races earlier are great betting races, but nobody's even going to remember who the winner was, you know, 2 days later.
Of course.
This is the race that's going to resonate with everybody on Friday at San Diego.
And it wouldn't surprise me either if Scabbard jumped up and ran well, the horse formerly known as Noose.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Teresa Gennaro.
And, you know, again, to be able to go 6 furlongs, 6.5 furlongs, and a mile and 16th and steady and still almost beat the horse that we're talking about, that's probably going to be the odds on favorite, Dennis's Moment. It's a great heavyweight championship race. And, you know, any of those three or four can come in and we would all say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And be interesting to see how they develop after that, because they all look like they're going to be able to bread to go two turns.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm going to come after you, Bill, saying that the British Futurity doesn't produce a juvenile winner. Street Sense was third in the British Futurity before he won.
All right, let me the winners of this race never seem to do anything in the Breeders' Cup.
If you insist. I mean, I'm a fan too of Maxfield. Joe and I were on the same horse at Keeneland that weekend. I think Scabbard is in a way the X factor. We can save the heavy handicapping for next week, but I'm interested to see what people do with that figure, considering the way that Dennis's Moment finished that race, what he was asked or what he wasn't asked to do in the final 16th of a mile. I just think it makes Scabbard's race look a little better than maybe it really was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that the week after the race, that it was probably a little illusory because Dennis's Moment was so wrapped up. But yeah, he reeks of a wise guy horse to me, Scabbard, that I think a lot of people are going to try to outsmart the favorites and go with him.
I'm not hearing any love for Eight Rings here. We barely even mentioned the horse that, you know, would be undefeated if not throwing the jockey. Like you said, a 6-length winner of a grade one last time out, Bob Baffert. Does anybody have any negative opinions on him?
I mean, the figure for the American Pharoah was a little light, I think. Other than that, he really hasn't done anything wrong. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be I would think it's going to be probably 6-5, 8-5, two favorites taking the bulk of the money, and then maybe 7-2 or 4-1 on Maxfield, something like that. But yeah, I mean they're definitely going to be on a similar plane in terms of the betting public's preference.
So I'm no Mike Welsh or Bruno DiGiulio, but the work that he had the other day was to my eye was not appealing. Mm-hmm.
This is Eight Rings we're talking about.
Eight Rings, yeah. Just didn't finish up. Just really wasn't hitting the line real hard. Who knows what the instructions were? For all I know, those were the instructions. To me, it was not something that I would want to see.
That's the kind of thing that I think will show up in the pools early on, too. If he opens up at 3-1 or something, I think it's probably a good bet that other people have noticed that as well. But no, that's good insight. I hadn't seen that work. So we're joined now by our first, this is our landmark thing on the TDN podcast. It's our first call-in guest for the TDN Writers Room, and it is the inimitable Saul Kumin of Medicat Stables, head of Plains Partners, and several other powerful partnerships. Saul, how's it going?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you guys.
Absolutely. Good to have you. So I guess the main thing we want to ask you about is Midnight Bizou. You're kind of in an interesting spot because you were such a big part of Monomoy Girl last year, where she kind of had the better of Midnight Bizou. And then this year, unfortunately, we haven't been able to see Monomoy Girl. It's a pretty good backup plan to have Midnight Bizou on the B team. What has she done this year? The question is basically, what's she done this year to kind of reach that level that Monomoy Girl was at last year?
Oh God. I mean, she's just been terrific all year. You know, I mean, as Musin, you know, held on to her in the, you know, kind of the downtime after the Breeders' Cup and gave her a little bit of a break in his barn. And, you know, she continues to just kind of continue to get better and better. You know, she showed to be, I would say, more versatile, than I had originally thought. Mm-hmm. And she's just really improved, in Steve's care, and, him and his staff have just done an unbelievable job with her. I mean, I think, you know, the year's been, you know, she's really done nothing wrong so far. And, you know, you're always nervous about going into a Breeders' Cup as a favorite, but You know, I think is no way, at least in that race, you can switch places with. Obviously, I think it happened, but it's been a really, really exciting filly to be a part of this year.
Yeah, and she's going to be a big favorite. You know, obviously, you don't want to count your chickens, but if she does win the Breeders' Cup Distaff, do you think that she should be the horse of the year?
Well, I mean, I don't vote. I'm glad I don't vote. Yeah. I know, you know, I know my place in the industry. And it's not to have I don't have enough knowledge to be making those decisions. I think, look, clearly if she wins this race and is 8 for 8, you know, she's got to be in the discussion. I would think the only other horse at that point that would deserve to be in the discussion would be Bricks and Mortar. People have different views about dirt horses and turf horses. People have different views about, you know, male and female horses. And I think that will all come into play if they both are able to win their Breeders' Cup races. You know, if they both win, I think they're both in discussion. I think if one of them wins and the other doesn't, I would think the winner would be the clear horse of the year. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see what happens, you know, from there.
Right.
Solid's Bill Finley. You don't have to convince me because I'm a big Midnight Bisou fan. I vote for number one in the NTRA poll each week. But there's some skeptics in the room here.
Don't put that on us.
Okay. But one of the things that's been brought up is that the history of fillies winning the Horse of the Year, not always, but more often than not, they've run against males. And we had that golden three-year run where Javi de Grasse and Jan and Rachel Alexander were all Horse of the Year. They all raced against males during that campaign. Did you guys ever come close to thinking about taking on males? And if somebody were to bring that up and say, that's a reason why I'm not voting for Midnight Bisou, what would be your retort to that?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bill. I mean, I don't have, unfortunately, enough history in the game. This is my fifth year doing this. So I wasn't able to, unfortunately, to watch any of those fillies that you're talking about run at all. So my back knowledge is pretty weak. I understand it. It's a fair point. I don't think if you're a female, you're, you know, to be Horse of the Year, you're expected to beat the boys. I mean, to me, you're in a division, and if you win all your races in the division and people think you're worthy of it, then you deserve to get some votes. I understand that as a, you know, potential criticism. If Bricks and Mortar goes and wins the big purse in the mile and a half race, and that's a reason that people decide they're going to vote for him over her, I get it. I understand it. You know, for us, kind of the second part of your question, I don't think we ever seriously considered it. Jeff Bloom, who's the majority owner of the filly, along with Steve Asmussen, were really making the decisions and campaigning her. It never at least got to the point where we had a real discussion about it with me involved. And so my guess is they talked about lots of stuff, but it never quite got far enough along that they were ready to do it, I don't think.
So it's Jonathan Green. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I know we met briefly last year at the Eclipse Awards, but we were both meeting so many people. I don't think we had a meaningful conversation. So thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
You know, you've had such great success in such a short period of time. You mentioned only 4 or 5 years in the business. But one aspect that I think goes unnoticed is the fact that you do donate a percentage of the Breeders' Cup earnings to new vocations and to other nonprofits. We want to promote that a little bit because that part of the industry doesn't get recognized as often as it should. But as a leading owner in the industry, what prompted you to do that, and what are your expectations?
Well, I mean, Anna Ford at New Vocations does an absolutely terrific job. And, we've done it since our first year with Lady Eli and the Breeders' Cup. And, we'll do it this year and always continue to do it. It's a very easy way to support, an unbelievable organization. And aftercare is such a huge part of the sport. Anna does as good of a job as anybody. So that's one of those easy sort of no-brainer decisions. If you're lucky enough to get a big portion of any, purse that day, it's plenty of dollars for you and your partners. It's a pretty easy thing to give back to the people that need it and the horses that need it. So I kind of chalked that one up to one of the easier decisions that you make throughout the year.
Hey, Saul, it's Alan Carrasso. Looking at her PPs, she's run everywhere except Kalamazoo Downs, it looks like, Bill, right?
Yeah.
And she's obviously not a filly that needs to take her racetrack with her. She's also got the familiarity with Santa Anita, not necessarily a track, but but having stabled there with Bill Spahr in the early part of her career. Her work the other day, I spoke with Jeff the other day, and just wanted to see what you thought of her work the other day.
Listen, it was great. I mean, they've been super happy with how she's been coming into the race. I couldn't be happier about kind of where we are. At this point, you hope, the next 10 days or so goes well, and you hope you get a post that's decent, and you hope you get a good trip. But I think coming into the race, we feel really, really good about where she is.
Saul, Bill Finley again. Maybe we can break some news on the podcast here. That we had mentioned earlier that what a great 2018 Monomoy girl has had. Late summer, there was still hope that she would make the Breeders' Cup. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. Looks like this whole year is going to be a loss for you guys. Where do things stand? Is she going to be retired, or is she going to come back and race next year?
She's going to come back and race next year. Terrific. I mean, it's been a really tough year with her. We gave her, she after the Breeders' Cup, we normally give, the good horses that, have had long campaigns some time off. She had really, some bone bruising and some basic stuff, but nothing major. We gave her the time that we, any good, any horse deserves, and brought her back. And we were pretty close to picking a race. I think we were sort of 1 or 2 weeks away, and we sort of felt like if we got one prep in her, we might have a chance at the Breeders' Cup. She was bruising. And I think she had her last two works, before the one where she was just a little bit off, were tremendous. So, we had to send her kind of back to the farm. She's been at Windstar. She's doing really well right now. She looks good, but it's going to take a little bit of time. So we'll be patient. We got together as an ownership group and sort of thought, do we sell her? Do we bring her back? I think the great news about our group is that everybody really loves racing. And that's why we do it. So it was kind of an easy decision, frankly. Everybody wanted to bring her back, and that's the plan. So, we're excited for next year. I think that, there's nothing that's been wrong with her, frankly. Either time that we've given her time off has been any kind of an injury that would scare you as far as, her probability to come back or her ability to race at a high level. They've both been kind of small things, but as you guys know, you've been doing this longer than me. It's, 60 days is 6 months, right? It's never by the time they actually get back. They tell the new owner, it's just going to be 30 days. And then you realize, okay, 30 days is 5 months. So everything takes a little longer than anticipated. With her, obviously, we're going to be super careful. We really want her to be back for the meat of next year's season. So we're not going to rush her back and take our time. And then, hopefully we'll see her run, either at Oaklawn or Belmont or something like that in the spring.
This is Joe Bianca again, and I just wanted to kind of run down who else you're involved with for the Breeders' Cup, because, you do get involved with a lot of different partnerships. I know you're on Eight Rings, who's got a big chance in the Juvenile. What else are you looking forward to at the Breeders' Cup?
So I thought you guys would be proud of me. I've got two yearling purchases, both, both in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile with Eight Rings and British Idiom.
All right, that's ground floor. That's the ground floor.
Both bought as babies. Everyone gives me a hard time for buying the private horses. So I thought I'd get a little bit of love for that from the boys.
Well, we never give you a hard time, so.
No, I'm just kidding. So, so we've got Eight Rings in the Juvenile race. So I think he's got a big shot. Doing really well with Bob. A little bit of a head case as we saw a few races back, mm-hmm. but. I think he's coming into the race doing very well. British Idiom is a horse that we bought as a baby who, is 2 for 2, filly, doing really well with Brad Cox. We're excited about her. I own a part of a horse with Eric Johnson called Comical, mm-hmm. that will also be in that same race against British Idiom. We've got a horse called Andesite that we bought as a 2-year-old in training, that Brad Cox has, that ran second in a Pilgrim, that will be in the Juvenile Turf. We have one called Miss J. McKay for the Turf Sprint that is sitting on the outside looking in, I think 1 or 2 out right now. Mm-hmm. So we need a couple things to go our way for that to happen. That's a filly with Cal Lynch. We've got Uni and Bowie's Hero, both in the mile race. Uni's a horse we bought from Europe and has had a good campaign with Chad Brown, ran really well in the First Lady. Mm-hmm. So, hoping we don't get a bounce effort there, but she's coming into the race great. Her last breeze was actually really tremendous. And then Bowie's Hero as well, winning the Shadwell Mile. So both those horses are coming off pretty good efforts and I think have shots. Yoshida in the Classic. You know, maybe a shot. We'll see. It's a kind of a weird race, but he's doing pretty well. Midnight Bisou, we talked about. The sprint, a horse called Landeskog with Doug O'Neill, a horse called Whitmore, who we're not 100% sure which race he's going to run in yet, or even if he's going to come. We're kind of looking at the fields and trying to make a decision. Colefront, and that will be in the mile. And I think, you know, he's doing pretty well. I like his last race. Obviously, you know, the favorite will be tough in there, but I think, you know, he'll put on a good show or good effort. So we got some good stuff. I mean, you know, you kind of look at your year every year. At the beginning of the year, if you had said to me, you know, what horses are you most excited about? Honestly, I would have told you Monomoy Girl One, who obviously we talked about her year. Catholic Boy, I probably would have said two. You know, we didn't talk about him, but he just, you know, wasn't able to really move forward and had a bunch of little naggy stuff this year. And, we just retired him to stud. And then World of Trouble, who was ran second as a 3-year-old and was undefeated this year and obviously won a grade one on turf and dirt. So, you know, you kind of lose the three horses that were really at the top of your stable, or at least that you were maybe personally most excited about.
Right.
But, you know, the last couple of weeks we had some things pop up that weren't anticipated. Right. So we just, you know, keep trying to stick with a process and with a plan. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you get unlucky. And, we need about the next 10 days, we need some luck in our favor and try to close this year out the right way.
You're going to bring a whole suitcase full of hats? I mean, that's like 20 different hats you got to wear for the weekend.
I do get a lot of hats. I take one of each for myself. I put it in the Saratoga house and the rest of them I just give away.
Gotcha. All right, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, anytime. Anytime, guys. Thanks so much.
Good luck, man.
Have seeing some of you guys out in California.
Yeah, have a blast out there. We'll see you, man.
Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, cool. Thanks, guys. See ya.
So that was Saul Kuhman, who has a horse in pretty much every race in the Breeders' Cup. And we want to thank him for coming on and being our first calling guest here at the Writers' Room. Saul's always good to talk to, and we wish him luck going forward in the Breeders' Cup and through the rest of the year. Good to hear Modern White Girls coming back, definitely. I think that we assume that because they're kind of a racing forward partnership, but it's good to get that confirmation, and hopefully she can come back as the same horse, because you never know with these fillies, especially like what they're going to become. That's why I think it was kind of impressive what Midnight Bisou's done this year. But anyway, we're going to move on to Saturday's races now. Not going to touch on every single race in the interest of keeping this under a week long podcast. we got the filly and mare sprint to kick things off. I think the whole story there is Covfefe. I mean, she's probably the most exciting filly sprinter, I don't know, in a long time. I can't remember. I mean, Unique Bella was nice, but she was kind of a middle distance horse, I felt like, more so than a pure sprinter, even though she won the championship. So Covfefe's kind of, she's taken her track with her a little bit. I mean, she ran the big race in the Miss Preakness. She ran the big race in the Dogwood. She ran well in the test, although maybe not quite as well as in the other races. But first time out in California, so that's going to be a challenge. But I think especially with the 7 furlongs, I think she's better at 7 than 6. I don't really think it's down to her and Come Dancing in that race. I don't know if anybody else sees something else.
I certainly don't know. Yeah. And you know what? I'm not even going to say it's a 2-horse race. I think it's a 1-horse race. Okay. I like her that much. And if you didn't like her before last weekend, the fact that she beat Bells of One by 8 lengths, Bells of One came back and won the Raven Run and paid, $28 or something like that. I mean, now that race, the Dogwood just flies off the page.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, strange things happen in the Breeders' Cup, but, you know, you look at her 107 buyer in that race, and Come Dancing is 98, 96, 97 in her last restart. She does have a 114 to go back to, but she doesn't seem to be that kind of horse right now. You know, Covfefe runs back to that race. I don't think she loses. And, you know, I have tons of confidence in Brad Cox's ability to get her to race again on a high level. So I don't know if this is part of the pick six or anything like that. Probably not. But, you know, I think if anybody's doing horizontal wagers, you know, you look at this horse as a potential single. And if she gets beat, you just move on and try to hit the next thing coming up. But I Come Dancing's got a very nice record, but this is all about Covfefe.
Mm-hmm. Well, just for kicks and giggles, then I'll take the field.
Okay.
We'll bet a case of Rolling Rock.
Well, you know, that's not a bad bet, because no. If she's under even money, that's a good bet
for me. It's a good bet. It really is.
And I think she will be. Don't you think she'd be 4 to 5?
No question.
Yeah.
No
okay. question. All right. So you're on. Yeah. Jason Rolling Rock.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll do the proverbial handshake agreement that we have, you know, witnesses on. And really, it's just a matter of there's so many good horses in any given race at this level that if they're just a little off, then they may not hit the numbers. Again, if you look at patterns, you know, the horse ran an 86, then bounced a little bit. They gave it time off, ran an 84. I'm talking about Confeffi. Ran an 84, peaked at a 107. Bounce the next time out to an 84, started the trend again to a 98 107. You know, if you're looking at the buyer numbers and looking at patterns, you would say, okay, she's maybe going to a bounce. Bill, I would agree with you that she's definitely the horse to beat in the race, but I'll take, you know, a group of 10 or 11 against her just to see what happens. But it really is, out of all the races that we've talked about so far, she's the standout in her race.
I think the draw is going to be pretty important. If she draws inside, I'd be more likely to bet against her. I think Turf Sprint is kind of a snooze. I think the only real storyline is to see if Stormy Liberal can get back to his good form, because he really just hasn't been the same horse since, you know, he ran third in the Alco Sprint. That was a really good effort. But since coming back, he's third in the Green Flash at Del Mar, fifth in the Turf Sprint at Kentucky Downs, and then third in the Eddie D at Santa Anita. I mean, these are races that he's supposed to win easily if he's who he was a year ago or earlier this spring. So I don't know. Anybody have any feelings about that race?
Interesting that that Stormy's half-brother Leinster is in the race as well. It's kind of
cool. That is pretty cool. Absolutely.
He's on the way up, I think. And Stormy Liberal's on the way down. Yeah, that race, when he won the one to Troy, I mean, he was like 5-1 or something. He could have been 50-1 and I wouldn't have played him. But I mean, it was a big number. The Dirt Mile, the big ass fans Dirt Mile. It's
by the way, best name for a horse race ever.
Yeah.
In the history of the sport, best name for a horse race.
You need
ever.
To lock in like a
Better than like the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Come on.
Yeah, that's a really good one too. But right. Come on, you cannot top big ass fans. Unless,
they need to lock in like a 20-year sponsorship.
Yeah,
that,
give it to the guy
race.
For free just because it's so cool. I mean, this is the race of the century. If you ask me, just because, you know, I've been so looking forward to the big ass fans Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile.
But that's another race like the Philly and Mare Sprint that I think it's pretty much a one horse race. I mean, Omaha Beach. You know, I think the initial reaction was that it was a little bit lame that he went to the Dirt Mile because it's the easiest road to take of the three races he was considering. But I mean, looking at the field, you certainly can't blame them. I mean, it looks like an easy ticket to another $1 million purse for him. So I can't blame him for that. Anybody else have any other ideas in that race? It's kind of hard to come up with.
I just want to get Alan's opinion on the Korean Shipper. I mean, this horse has just won two major races there, an $800,000 race, the Korean Sprint, American bred by Tisnow out of a Dixie Union mare. Does this horse have any shot out?
Look, he's going to go in the gate. Yeah, he's going to have some
chance. He's a horse. He has four legs.
So they've gotten Flavien Pratt to ride. Flavien rode the Battle of Midway in the Dirt Mile 2 years ago. So that certainly is an endorsement. He's rumored to be the best horse that Korea's ever generated, which probably going to sniff it at, and probably rightfully so. But there's a horse in Korea called Dul Kong who won Illicit Stakes in Dubai last year, was Group 1 placed as well. And they think Blue Chipper is better than he is. Now, I'm not here to tell you that he's going to win this race. They thought this was a more suitable spot than the sprint. They thought that the 6 furlongs was too short, even though he just won the Keeneland Korea Sprint. I think he's going to go out there and give an honest account of himself. I think a runner is a runner. And, you know, those tracks over there are deep. For him to run 136 on the track in the very south of Korea, and those tracks are deep. Those are beachy. Mm. And for him to run 136, he broke the track record by a full second. He can run. I'm not going to tell you he's going to win, but I think he's going to run.
Do they sell big-ass fans in Korea?
Couldn't tell you.
They will if the horse wins, that's for sure. Next race on the docket is the Philly Ameri Turf, another race with pretty big European involvement. Weirdly, Magical's first preference is the turf, but she's supposed to run in the Philly Ameriturf. And again, like, and the more that I look at this, the more I think Saturday looks like a pretty chalky day. I can't see anybody beating her. The thing I love about Magical and Aiden O'Brien in general is You look at her PPs and you would swear that she was a male. You would swear that she was a colt because she never runs against her own sex. One time in her last 10 starts in the Yorkshire Oaks did she run against the girls. Every other start, the Arc, the Champion Stakes, the Irish Champion Stakes, the Coral Eclipse, like these are all against the best males in Europe. And she shows up pretty much every time. She had a little bit of a dull effort in the Arc, but other than that, first, second, first. And she really gave Enable all she could handle in the Breeders' Cup last year. I know Enable was the story, but I came away extremely impressed with Magical and her gameness just to hang in there. And she was 13 lengths clear a second, like, or clear a third. And Enable's not in the race. She's a double-digit winner of the Breeders' Cup Turf, and we're starting to talk about her credentials as an all-time great. So I can't really look past her in this race. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, obviously, Sister Charlie as well, but I think the class of Magical is too much for Sister Charlie.
I'll jump in. I mean, not to knock Magical at all. Everything you said is true, but I can't back up your statement that this is a one-horse race when Sister Charlie's in there. You know, let's not forget that she won this race last year. She's 3-for-3 this year. And Mr. Chad Brown, I've heard he's pretty good trainer.
He's okay.
This guy, yeah. And, you know, he's plotted for this race. You know, Sister Charlie's form against males separates her from Sister Charlie, who's only run against females in her career. But I don't care if they brought over Nijinsky for this race, and Nijinsky was a girl. I'm not going to say pick any horse and say that Sister Charlie can't beat him on the square.
She's nice, but I mean, the last race, I didn't love the Flower Bowl. I thought I expected a much more impressive performance out of that. And, you know, last year in the Breeders' Cup, if they had run head-to-head, Sister Charlie and Magical, with their respective efforts last year, who do you think would have won the race?
I mean, again, a good point, but, you know, you're forgetting one thing. This is Chad Brown. And, you know, it's just that name next to a horse in the program with a good horse, I'm never going to toss that horse out mm-hmm. or say that they can be beaten.
Yeah, and he's done a great job with her. Yeah,
you know, I mean, you know, I've raved about Chad on many times in the paper and on the podcast before. I mean, that's how much respect I have for him. You know, I guess if you think that way, bet the exacta and hope it comes back and pays $12.
It's not going to pay $12, okay. I don't think. Probably 8 or 9.
All right.
Moving on to the sprint. It's not the most exciting sprint I've ever seen, but you got a little bit of the star power. I mean, I'm a huge Mattioli fan. Similar to Midnight Bizou, I like that Steve Asmussen sent him out there early to get him accustomed to the track, and it seems like he's taken to it. He drilled a 5-furlong bullet in 58-4 from the gate the other day, so pretty good omen, I would think, for this race if he continues to train that way. Imperial Hint is obviously a crowd favorite, a fan favorite, because he's so tiny and so game. We love those horses here. Catalina Cruiser, who's the news came out today that he's going to Lane's End. Not a big surprise being by Union Rags, but he's got an outside shot as well. But I'm all about Mattioli in the sprint. I mean, we'll see with the draw, and we'll see how much speed ends up in there. But again, another not full field, which is a little bit surprising. And maybe that works even better for the favorites, that there's less of a chance of a supersonic pace that you sometimes get in the sprint.
You know, again, we'll kind of dissect these races next week. I'm kind of hoping Whitmore ends up shipping out and that they opt for the sprint. His race at Keeneland is better than it looks last time out. Imperial Hint and Chance Lot and Catalina Cruiser to a certain extent. I mean, the pace is going to be cracking, and it's going to set up for somebody with Whitmore style, assuming the track is not biased.
Mm-hmm. About the mile, I don't know. Like, I don't really have any strong opinions, but Al, you could probably speak to some of the Euros.
I mean, I think it's outstanding that we have. I mean, you get the occasional filly, the American-based filly in this race. I think it's great to see Got Stormy and Uni both show up. I mean, if Uni were able to reproduce her effort, if she draws a gate and is allowed to settle and make a run like she did at Keeneland, I don't think they're going
to
beat her.
That was an unbelievable run. Yeah. I mean, she's had some nice races before, but that to me was a clear jump forward.
To me, as a handicapper, this is the most exciting race of the card. You know, because you can make a case literally for 7-8 horses in here. And with the Euros coming over and just the excitement of having Euros and fillies in the race, I mean, it's really anybody's game.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely the best betting race on the card, I would say.
And so many times, I think you've seen horses that win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. They just don't go on. They don't train on very well. And Line of Duty is actually trained on this year okay. Mm-hmm. You know, he's third in the Prix du Moulin at Longchamp. And Circus Maximus beat him that day. He's coming over as well. So those are two pretty high-quality three-year-old European milers. They could have something to say as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me just bring up a point and see how you guys feel about this. Al, you're on the Uni bandwagon, but what if she draws 14? I mean, what about post positions in this race? You know, that to me would be, I'd put a big X through anybody that draws, you know, 12, 13, 14, maybe even 11 through 14. I mean, they got to have to be so superior to the field to win from that post. And, you know, the race is too evenly matched.
Right. I mean, it has happened before. We talked about this in the last couple of podcasts. Six Perfections and Caracanti have come from out there to win. I think given her running style, she's going to drop back, get over, save ground, and come with a late run. I'm less worried about, you know, she's not a speedball. She doesn't need to be up there with the pace. So I would be less concerned with her about the draw.
Yeah, I think those late closers, I generally don't pay as much attention to the draw as I do with horses who have speed. In the turf, I mean, Bricks and Mortar is going to be a pretty heavy favorite. I think he might be a little bit of a bet against. I mean, it's hard just looking at it. Again, we're looking at this. We've only had this for about an hour or two, so we're just kind of skimming it. We'll have more fleshed out thoughts next week. But I don't know. You got enough decent Europeans in there that at a distance that we don't know if Bricks and Mortar can handle, I think he's probably one of the favorites you want to take a shot against on Saturday.
I can see that. And we didn't discuss the distaff. Are we going to just leave Sol Kumin's quotes for that?
Sol covered that. He's got the winner. I'm going to say that. I'm going to go out and say that.
All right. I just wanted to let people know we didn't forget about that race because we've been going in chronological order. I mean, what's not to like about Bricks and Mortar? That's not a very insightful comment there. But, you know, I see what you're saying, that, you know, this race is wide open and you have some unknowns in here. I wish Magical was in this one. I really do. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why they made this race their first preference. If that wasn't their intention, they have this Anthony Van Dyke horse in there, and they being, of course, Coolmore and Aiden O'Brien. But, you know, his form is pretty, doesn't really do much to inspire you. I can see your point, but let's not forget, you know, Bricks and Mortar's probably running for horse of the year here. I think if he wins it, the fact that he's been on top in the polls all year long, he will win horse of the year. And again, you know, I am a member of the Chad Brown fan club. Yes, I've unabashedly, like, you know, have a man crush on this guy.
Pom-poms out for Chad.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, again, it's Chad Brown. And, you know, he zeroed in on this race probably from the time the horse won the Pegasus, you know, put this in his sights. I hate to see that they don't have a race since August, but, you know, that's modern training for you. Mm-hmm. And certainly I don't see any reason why he can't go a mile and a half.
I honestly think that, you know, with the distance question mark, I would have liked to see him in the Joe Hirsch, you know, at Belmont just to give it a try before they do this. But like you said, that's modern training. I understand the desire to have a full 10 weeks or whatever it is leading up to this, but I would have liked to see him take a crack at that first. So we're going to finish this off with the classic, obviously. I don't want to be negative, but to me, this is one of the least inspiring Breeders' Cup classics I've ever seen. You know, you got a couple of big names in Code of Honor and LA and McKenzie, but really, like, if anybody else wins that race, it's going to be probably the most forgettable renewal since Valpony.
Since who?
Take it back to Arlington for Al.
I was there, freezing my behind off.
I mean, I think people more remember the scam, the pick six scam, more than they do who actually won the race. But yeah, it's hard to get excited about that race. I think it's most interesting if Code of Honor wins, because then you've got more of a scramble for Horse of the Year. But other than that, I couldn't care less, really. I know it's bad to say I'm going to be out there covering it, but it's just not exciting to me at all compared to the other races.
Look, your favorite is 2 for 6 this year. Mm-hmm. In the Baffert horse that you know, is McKenzie just being favored by default?
Yeah.
In here, it's highly unlikely Horse of the Year will emerge from this. I think the Code of Honor would have to win, and both Bricks and Mortar and Midnight Bizou would have to lose. So I don't think that we're going to see Horse of the Year. Yeah, you know, it's just I don't say it's a yawner because it is a Breeders' Cup Classic and there's some very good horses in here, but I totally agree. I mean, this is not one of the rare years where this is not the race you're going to wake up Saturday morning and say, that's what I'm really looking right. forward to today at Santa Anita. Yeah. Not at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's it for this week's episode. I want to thank everybody for listening to our semi-coherent rambling on the Breeders' Cup pre-entries. Next week, when we have the real entries, I think people will have a little bit more of a solid opinion about the races. I'm going to be at Santa Anita next week, so Bill Finley will be your guest co-host. I want to thank Bill. I want to thank John Green, Alan Carasso, and our first call-in guest, Saul Kumin, and his coterie of Breeders' Cup contenders. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.